Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lodge Seaters, and today I'm joined by Carl.
Hello.
And Stelios.
Hello.
And today we'll be talking about the Deliveroo experience, our Westerners being replaced, and channel migrants for Ireland. Which, is that a new lobbying group?
Yeah, it's called the British government.
Right, right. They have tried. But anyway, I have something to mention, of course, this being that there are career opportunities. So if you go to lodgeseaters.com, scroll down, there is a career section, and in there you will find some jobs. I've been asked to read, we are looking for people with bills and video skills, even, in videography, audio, and editing, available to work in the East London or Swindon. If you're interested in the full job spec, it's available at lodgeseaters.com/careers. So there we are. But otherwise, I have no more announcements, so let's get into the experience.
Oh, yeah.
You guys feeling the Deliveroo experience? Because we're going to go on a wild ride.
No, a wild ride?
Yeah, my words are not working.
Possibly today. A wild ride as well.
You got the Deliveroo level speaking instead.
No, I'm morally opposed to Deliveroo.
Good.
Never use it.
But on what reasons?
It's the illegal economy. Yeah, I'm not using it.
It's just also crazily expensive.
I don't know. I never use it. I actually have no idea how much it costs.
Well, it's just delivery, but bad. So what we're talking about for the Deliveroo experience is, the fact that everyone's getting conscripted to work for Deliveroo.
Oh.
I don't know if you've seen this. This is a lovely British
account. Look at me. I am the Deliveroo driver now.
Doing my part.
If you find one of these bags, it's like finding King Arthur's sword in the pond. You've been chosen. You must now be conscripted and go out and deliver on bikes. And Deliveroo is kind of shit. People who don't know what it is, it's a delivery service, right? So it's a company that organizes delivery of food from restaurant to you. Except, of course, it's not Mario on his moped or Steve in his Volkswagen.
Yeah.
It's instead Jamal on his bike, which...
On his stolen bike.
Maybe. Maybe. Who can tell?
I can tell. Jamal didn't buy that rusty old thing.
Crimenap of Swindon.
Sorry, I know.
But this, just the fact that that's bad, just on the face of it. Like, replacing motor engine for getting food to you with man on bike means food is cold, which means delivering of food didn't go well, if nothing else. There's also a lot of accusations of them stealing the food.
Oh, really? So
this is a fella here who has got himself a moped. He's just eating the food there, which might be judgmental. Maybe he purchased that food. But then there is also video evidence of them actually stealing food. So this is someone's, like, Ring doorbell or something here, in which a fella turns up, turn off the birds, though they're lovely, gets the food out, shoves it on the ground, and he's like, there you are, takes a picture of it, there's evidence that he has delivered your takeaway, don't worry, he's doing his job.
Oh, this is big brain.
And then what you do is you take the takeaway, put it back in the bag, and leave with it. Take it home. It's yours now.
There's like 100% tax.
Yeah.
On food.
Yeah.
I mean, I do love the idea that he's like...
This guy's got it worked out, to be honest.
I was paid to...
gaming the system.
I was paid to deliver the food.
Yeah.
I've done that part. Now I'm a free agent.
Take a photo of the food at the doorstep to show that it's arrived. I have done that.
I love the fact that he's not running.
Yeah.
No. He's just leaving the scene like a gentleman. Huge explosions behind. He's just walking.
He doesn't want to, you know, spill the food or anything. He wants to take care of it. So there's that.
This isn't his first time.
But
this isn't the first time he's done this. He does this all the time.
There's a lot of criticisms of Deliveroo, is all I'm getting at. It's a service which is meant to be, well, through your phone, a universal service for the whole country that people can get their food delivered. And the idea on paper sounds eh. And then in practice, eh.
Yeah.
Not great. But then I found this. This is what inspired all this. Local.
Is that Jeremy Vine?
No, it's a man named Harry. And this fella, he decided he would sign up for Deliveroo and get the experience.
Oh, yeah.
Firsthand. And keep in mind, he's actually done this before. He did this for a different service like this back in the day, and we'll get to that at the very end. But this whole story of what it's like to be on the Deliveroo experience is bad. It's very bad.
Wow.
You're not going to talk about the lived experience of being a Deliveroo driver?
But I am indeed.
This really underpins the complaints about illegal immigrant labor, doesn't it? They're prepared to work for literally half of what a normal person is legally mandated to work for.
So here's what he writes here. This guy spent a few weeks as a Deliveroo driver. First up, Deliveroo likes to claim that you should earn at least the minimum wage, which is £11.44 per hour. Him, he worked 22 hours and 50 minutes, rode 105 miles, did 27 drop-offs and earned 120 quid. So he works out at £5.28 an hour. Hmm. So, yeah, no, your wages are not good if you're working like this guy. You end up with half, even worse than half, I think, actually, of the minimum mandated wage by the state.
It's also a gym, though. Oh, yeah, exercising. Yeah. You just imagine riding 105 miles. You stay in shape.
Yeah, yeah. That just think the good it does for his heart.
That is the positive. Like, if you want to go for a bike ride, you might as well sign up and get some money as well. Yeah. But here we go. So here's the story. So he says in here, I spent one evening shift delivering to city law firms, Bank of America, McKinsey, etc. The sheer volume of meals delivered to these workers is amazing. That trolley outside McKinsey went from being empty to 16 orders within 10 minutes. Bank of America has a special holding pen for riders. Now, the UK economy really is just finance.
Yeah.
London Central Finance is the whole thing that we do anymore. That's, yeah. I don't know as a measure of the economy, but it's the big thing we do, nothing else. So I do get a sense that when you look at Central London, the bankers particularly, you actually get a sense of where the priorities of the state are. Like, why are things going the way they're going? And this is interesting, because why is it that they're so overwhelmed with deliveries in the central area that that's their mode of getting food anymore?
This is a way that people in America are able to track whether political action is actually happening in the US or not by how busy the pizza places are in Washington, D.C.
It's certainly a revealing preference. Mm. And it seems to be the case with central London as well. So here they say, I also delivered a lot of at dish room meals. Now, I don't know what dish room is because I don't live in London.
Dishoom.
No, dishoom, sorry. Yeah. Why does everything sound French? A dishoom, the experience.
It's a curry.
Dishoom.
So they're saying here, if you think your curry comes from a restaurant, nope. It's likely from a dark kitchen down an alley in a Stepney or behind Penton Valley Prison. So that's where you're getting that. Because, right. Of course, if we don't actually have to operate a restaurant.
Yeah.
We just do deliveries. We don't have to, well, be inspected by customers.
Sure.
So distribution of labor.
Is that situation.
Outsourcing each of the ingredient.
But he points out beneath it that, to give credit, the kitchens are clean.
Well, so, some of them.
Well, okay.
So he says here, to give credit, Deliveroo Edition kitchens were clean. So the ones right. With the brand on it provided a toilet for riders and drinking water. Rival dark kitchens we visited were not so sparkling, and there's an image of them. Well, we'll find out where that is later. Can you guess what part of London that might be? Is it the more diverse or the less diverse area?
I'm not sure I'm allowed to say.
Well, then mind then. So this is him making the point here. I delivered to a lot of Park Lane apartments, Bloomsbury flats with swanky concierge.
Yep.
God, I'm not part of that world. Seventh floor council flats as well. Bankers, Mayfair residents didn't tip once. People in council flats were the ones who did. Which is an interesting reveal preference as well there.
Yeah.
Because, of course, as I mentioned, a lot of the money, or at least a huge amount of it that the UK makes by laundering other people's dirty money, is made in central London. And those are the people overwhelmingly using Deliveroo to a ridiculous extent that they have to have their own waiting areas for them now.
The super rich who don't tip.
Yeah.
I don't tip, but I'm not super rich.
I mean, I'm not a fan of tipping culture in general.
No, I'm not, but...
kind of hate the Americans.
I don't think they're abstaining on moral grounds.
No, but I also love the idea that if they were, that's just... I mean, no, this is just like complete copium on my part. The idea that the bankers are all like, I'm not tipping the migrant workers. So they'd just be encouraging more of them. This doesn't make sense because you're using them for one.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't want that, don't use the service. So he writes at the end here, just as a point. Why is the pay so terrible, apart from the lack of tips? Well, Deliveroo's at least minimum wage claim is while you're on the job. It doesn't take into account waiting for orders. And in simple terms, there's too many riders.
Oh my God. Immigration is destroying the Deliveroo economy.
It actually has.
Deliveroo has fallen.
Deliveroo has actually fallen. Just Eat, Uber Eats, all the piece of S delivery services. They replaced John and his car with Jamal and his bike. And the problem being there's too many riders. There's just too many people signing up for the service to do it, which is weird considering the pay so bad.
That's a problem for the people, not the Deliveroo, though.
Of course.
Yeah. Sure.
But that's a problem for society as well.
Yeah.
Why is it that the job of delivery boy has now become a situation where you will get paid half the minimum wage?
Hugely desirable job of delivery boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also mentions in here that you can get paid extra if you work at 3 a.m. just to put off people who are like, well, you can earn more if you do such and such. And it's like, yes, but it never was this way. Even for Deliveroo, it wasn't this way a few years ago, in fact. And that's just a great example of the Deliveroo economy falling down the tube, which, all right, I mean, I mean, Deliveroo has been known as a bit of a meme at this point for, you know, illegal migrant workers for some time. And even they are feeling the pinch of illegal immigration the illegal migrants. Will someone please think of them and their employment status? If no one else than the Home Office, please. Because we've been over this before. I mean, this is something we see in Swindon, in which there's a hotel, only houses illegal immigrants, and yet somehow they're all working for Uber Eats, Just Eats, and Deliveroo. Right. Okay. So what's happened there? Well, there's increased competition on the lowest paid workers in society by bringing in mass numbers of immigrants and also illegal immigrants, people who are willing to work for less than the minimum. And we'll do things like this.
Yeah.
Because why would you not? You're literally at the bottom rung, and you're now competing with the bottom rung of the native population of workers. But there's no protectionism on their livelihood. Instead, there is massive incentives for more of you to come, which then pushes down the weight, the price lower and lower, which might be great for people ordering delivery. You could argue. You could argue it's great for Deliveroo. Their profits are ridiculous.
Sure.
Apparently their revenue is 700 million.
Jesus.
Profit 600 million.
Jesus.
That is beautiful.
Amazing. Yeah.
That is hyper-capitalism right there. Good job, lads. But at the same time, bad job, lads, because you're employing illegal immigrants. That's not legal. All the right, there's a good reason why it's illegal, because it pushes down wages of the natives, which, funnily enough, we're kind of for pushing those up.
I mean, one might also point out that it seems exploitative. You're taking illegals and you're paying them half of minimum wage.
Yeah, I care less about the illegals.
Yeah, I'm not saying I care about them, but like...
But you could make that sort of argument.
The whole thing is rotten from top to bottom, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no one in this cycle is actually doing much better off, although... No. Might be doing marginally better off than being in Afghanistan, but I would argue actually, nah, it's better. Trust me. But the situation of this guy, this whole experience he wrote, he actually wrote for the Daily Mail about this.
Oh, yeah.
And what's amazing is that the revealed situation, because he doesn't want to mention it, presumably, or he would have thought, is that obviously, yeah, the illegal immigration is now even killing the illegal immigrant economy, which I'm still in awe that that can happen.
Yeah, I didn't realize such a thing was possible.
It can get bad for even them. Because as I mentioned, though, the problem being too many drivers.
Yeah.
Too much demand. And we do know that a lot of them are illegal because we just see it in our day-to-day lives and also, well, he'll mention why, I suppose. He says here, all you need is a smartphone, my own bicycle or moped, and the right to work in the UK. How do you prove that? Well, I have to upload my passport, my national insurance number, and watch a short 5-minute training video on how to do his job, including asking customers for ID if they've ordered alcohol. Now, of course, that doesn't work. You might think on paper that makes sense. Like, you ask for a passport and a national insurance number, only a citizen would have those things, or someone who has a right to work in the UK would have those things. Mm. No. No, they just make fake ones.
Oh, really?
Funnily enough, criminals don't care and will break these laws. So if you just don't bring in those people who can benefit from that sort of fraud, you wouldn't have this problem. But we do. So we have the problem. So there we are. So he says, many city firms have business accounts with Deliveroo, giving their staff allowances to spend on the app rather than offering in-house canteens. Not a single one of the well-paid consultants, bankers, or lawyers ever tipped me.
Why would they? It's not their money.
What do you mean?
Well, it's the company money, right?
Oh, right. Yeah.
If you're paying through the app.
Suppose so, but I mean, even then.
Yeah, but if they're paying through the app, maybe they don't have the option of doing it.
But that's a good revealed situation as to why the city has become so reliant on this. Hmm. Why are they so obsessed with using the service, even though it's evil, in my opinion? Well, the city firms just don't want to offer food anymore. Just why would you? It's cheaper to give everyone to do this. I mean, it's worse.
It's cheaper to use the imported slave class, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, we're making a worse society, but I suppose it is cheaper. Cool. But here's on to the Islamic situation.
Oh, yeah.
I'll spoil it. Because you remember that kitchen from earlier, the dark kitchen?
Yeah.
I told you to guess. So he says, Friday lunchtime, the Rider map suggests swathes of London are not busy. So when you download, you get like hexagons, and you go to different hexagons. And in those hexagons, it's either busy or not busy. And if it's busy, you're more likely to get service, right?
Right.
So he says his hexagon is not busy. But there are two hexagon shaded very busy. So I ride over to Stepney in East London and see some other riders going down an alley. Off the Mile End Road, past the Islamic bookshop, I follow them. So you've got to go down your dark alleys, round to the Islamic area, all right. They turn into a scruffy courtyard with three light industrial units and a gaggle of cyclists and moped riders waiting outside one labeled Deliveroo Editions. This is where you're getting your food from.
Right. You think, I'm not. Bloody hell.
Yeah, but this is where these people are getting their food from.
Yeah.
Because this is the thing. You watch Kitchen Nightmares?
Yeah.
No.
All right. Well, in Kitchen Nightmares, for people who haven't watched it, quite often you'll see the restaurant. Gordon will walk in, eat the food.
And I have seen this.
Food's always bad.
Yeah.
Because it's Gordon.
And he yells at them.
Yes. But what you don't... What I love, the best bit, is when he goes into the fridges and then discovers, like, just moldy, rotten food that they're serving, or even just got in there. Raw meat next to cooked meat or whatever.
Yeah.
And you remember, there's a reason there are good restaurants and bad restaurants, and it's important to always go to the good ones, because not only is it just the quality of the food, it's the kitchen. The practices in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's an Italian place that just does pizza nearby that we recently started going to, and the reason I love it is because you go in there and you see all the ingredients labeled, dates, separated, meats in the right places, and then you see them make it in front of you. And you
really, it's not like Kenya Butchers that got shut down then.
Funnily enough, there's no rat feces
or
cockroaches. Strange, that. But when you're ordering on an app, I mean, this is another reason why I just think it's probably best to always just go and pick up your food.
Yeah, you never can't see any of that.
Yeah. I mean, this guy mentions you're going down this scruffy courtyard. There's an industrial estate. There's just hordes of guys on bikes and then these kitchens. You know what's going on in these kitchens?
No.
The best of practices, I'm sure. But he says they're a dark kitchen. That's what they're called.
Seems racist.
If you think you're ordering from your local high street restaurant, you're not. The chances are that your food is being made in one of the dark kitchens. Deliveroo has 14 in London, each making food for multiple restaurants. So if you're ordering different types of food, you're getting them from the same kitchen.
Hmm.
Now, there's a reason you specialize in different types of food. So you go to an Italian restaurant,
but
just Italian food.
This is these are extraneous costs, Callum. If we just have it all in one giant kitchen, that's a slop being made by illegal immigrants. I mean, that's really cheap.
It is indeed.
You're not thinking about this at all.
It's just a bad way of doing it. So he says here,
not for the business owners, £600 million a year profit.
So the Stepney one he goes into is cooking for Dishoom, the upscale Indian restaurant. So it's got noodles, Tao Tao Ju, a Chinese, Remedy Kitchen, which specializes in soups and salads, Ha A Tortise, never heard of it, a Japanese sushi brand, and WA Cafe, a Japanese patisserie shop, among others. All of those are the same kitchen.
I love that this is like industrial food production under the guise of it being, exclusive, high quality, branded restaurants. Like, there's something about this that I find hilarious because I don't eat at any of it.
It's almost Soylent Green levels of I don't trust you.
Yeah.
You're making Japanese food, sushi, Jesus. You're making Chinese food, Indian food, and then like Panera soups and salads all in the same place alongside a patisserie.
I don't trust places that make everything they do.
Yeah, well, they literally can't do it effectively. That's why you specialize.
Yeah.
Sure.
But also eating outside, generally speaking, isn't that healthy as eating inside. So start cooking your own food.
But if you are going to eat out, go somewhere where you can see it's all dated, if nothing else.
Well, just go to
a decent place. But I know there's something about this that really amuses me, where it's like you've got the fakery of the brand on the outside, but then when you look behind the curtain, it's just the industrial slop production. And it's just, eat your slop and overpay for it, and it's like, I'm not sympathetic at all. I find it really amusing.
Yeah, it's like what we were saying with the product, that each different part of the product is made on different factories in kitchens of the world.
Yeah,
that's the same.
This is not artisanal food.
I mean, if we can get this back on screen just to show people, just keep in mind, like, imagine you walk into a single kitchen and they're making sushi and Indian. I mean, that's just not a combination. It's not anything you ever want to read. Being made in the same place.
The best bit about this is it totally undermines the argument for multiculturalism that goes along the lines of, yes, but think of the restaurants, Callum. Right?
Yes, I've seen the bloody restaurants.
Exactly, that's the point. But we need Indians here to make Indian food. We need, and it's like, no, actually, you can have an undifferentiated mass of foreigners illegally come here and make the slop that you eat and we'll just put the nice label on it so you think you're ordering that thing.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's nonsense.
So a mere 50 yards away, he says, from that slop kitchen, which is making everything under the sun, down in an adjacent valley, there is a larger site run by a company called Ghost Kitchens. That just fills you with confidence.
Yeah.
Okay, that's bad branding.
That's good. That's good.
He had to collect a burger from. To collect the food, riders have to walk down various corridors, past piles of food tins, bottles, cooking oil, empty boxes, and then by the time I visited, bins full of rubbish on the floor. I had to chat with a fellow rider, Amin, from Morocco. As of course it was.
Delivering Chinese food.
Yeah. As we wait for orders outside the dark kitchen, his English is good, unusual for a delivery driver, says Harry here.
Yeah.
He's out doing it. That's the bit I love. That's the bit, because he doesn't mention it at any point, but obviously it's so bloody true. This is such an illegal run place. It is such a foreign run thing. The whole concept.
He's the only Englishman in it.
Yeah.
Why would they need to learn English?
I bet he stood out like a sore thumb.
I bet he did.
It's just like, they're all talking in Arabic, and like, there's a white guy over there. He's English. He's not even, I don't know, Russian.
He's got the delivery bag.
Do you think he's an undercover journalist? Yes, he was. But he ends this off with 8 years ago, a mere 8 years ago. So what would that have been? That would have been, what, 2016?
Yeah.
Yeah, so 2016, when Deliveroo was just starting to become a household name, I undertook a similar exercise. I earned £11.20 an hour in 2016 money. Back then, I thought the pay wasn't bad, but it was a myth that you were a free agent. You had to work certain hours and shifts. Since then, the freedom has increased, partly because Deliveroo has been forced to prove through a series of court cases that the workers are actually contractors, not employees, meaning that they don't have the rights of an employee. But the pay has also fallen dramatically in that time period. Now, I'll be honest, I think the pay going down so much, as he puts it, the reason being there's too many drivers, might not be because of the court battles. Court battles will have an effect. I think the number one thing that may have halved your pay, and that's just in pounds, never mind the real term. I mean, what is the real term? I should have done that, actually, thrown it through the inflation calculator. John, I wonder if you can load up the inflation calculator just on another tab and just put in 2016, £11.20, to see what he would have been getting paid today if it was the same. So I got a hog. Yeah, that one. So £11.20, 2016, if you can do that, John. Thank you. But that massive amount of drop has to be from the massive supply of low-skilled labor by immigration.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other thing that would destroy it that much.
£5.
John's just done it. It would have been £16 an hour today if he was getting paid the same, and instead they're getting paid £5. So their pay is now more than a third of what it would have been in 2016 to do the same job. I'll be honest, I don't think that's just court battles. I think that has to be the illegal immigration doing it en masse. So there we are. Wages have been driven through the absolute floor because now even the third world is competing with the third world. And quality of delivery has gone through the floor as well.
Deliveroo against illegal immigration.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know when they're going to unionize their anti-immigrant union, but...
Can you have a union of illegal immigrants working illegally in the underground economy? I don't know.
Well, we will see in the coming year, I suppose. But there we are. Deliveries are worse. People are worse off in terms of wages as well. Fantastic. Great trend. Thank you, Deliveroo. Let's move on.
Right. So, are Westerners being replaced? Now, I want to say that every time I'm talking about a replacement, there is the obvious boogeyman in the room, that is the great replacement theory. And a lot of people are instantly trying to reject anything that anyone who talks about replacement says, on the grounds that they are going to be associated with a theory that is supposedly very bad and things like that. But I want to say that I'm not familiar with the details of the theory, but as a process, replacement in the West is absolutely a fact. And we will talk about a lot of the data that seem to support this. Now, let me say, Eva Vlaar Dingerbroek spoke...
Well pronounced. I can't pronounce her surname.
I've messed up pronunciation many times. I think I got it right this time.
Yeah.
So she gave a speech at a Hungarian conference, mm-hmm. saying that, here it is, the full speech I gave at CPAC Hungary, that the establishment is losing its absolute mind about. She portrays the great replacement theory as a forbidden truth.
Can we just talk about based Rod Schneider there, though?
Well,
do you know who Rob Schneider is?
I kind of just know him from the jokes about him at this point. Rob Schneider.
Yeah, but he's an actor from like the 90s and early 2000s.
Plays a stapler. He's in Rob Schneider as the stapler.
He was in loads of stuff.
He was in funny stuff.
Yeah.
Also with Adam Sandler, he has played in several comedies.
He's been in loads of stuff. So yeah. Interesting how he's broken ranks with the Hollywood types.
Yeah. So he says,
Snyder is the far right influencer coming to cinemas Monday. Sorry.
So he says the global elites want to destroy Western civilization, and Europe has already fallen. America can't afford another 4 years of the globalist Biden regime flooding our country with non-citizens, forever changing our nation into the rot we see in Democratic-run cities.
Okay, Ham, just a quick thing. Is he wrong in any way when he says that?
Just one. When he says Europe has already fallen, it's fallen when people believe it is.
I didn't hear no bell.
I guess there is that. You know, maybe I should reply to that with just a picture of the Reconquista. But to be fair, though, okay, that one thing aside, it's not already fallen. It's in the process of falling. Thank you, Rob. But that's exactly correct.
Yeah, it is.
Great messaging. I would have said that.
Yes. So Elon takes issue with Eva's comment, and he says the problem with great replacement theory is that it fails to address the foundational issue of low birth rates. Record low birth rates are leading to population collapse in Europe and Asia even faster. Immigration is low in Asia, so there's no replacement going on. The countries are simply shrinking away. If this doesn't turn around, then any countries on Earth with low birth rates will become empty of people and fall into ruin like the remains we see of the many long dead civilizations. So I want us to talk about something in this tweet and we can come back to it. But mainly, it's the last part where he says, if this doesn't turn around, then any countries on Earth with low birth rates will become empty of people and fall into ruin. Because the issue here for me is that this is, on the one hand, true. But the question is whether a lot of people embrace this mindset and say, like Chuck Schumer says, for instance, and the Democrats say in the US, well, yes, low birth rates are a problem and they can be solved by unqualified, unrestricted mass migration on this reason. The question is whether that sabotages the...
Can we talk about that sentence?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But
let me just say, the question is whether this sabotages the younger generations of each Western country from having families and improving their numbers. Yep.
I just love that we're going to fix low birth rates by increasing immigration. Yep. But the birth rate still remains low if you increase immigration.
Also,
it doesn't actually change it.
One thing that people like Chuck Schumer forget is that foreigners are also humans and they're subject to the same incentives. And so, say, if foreign women come over to America or the UK and they realize, oh, look, there's birth control completely available all day, every day, I might actually reduce the number of children I'll have too. And so they are subject to the same incentives and they go, oh yeah. And so we actually see, if you look at the graphs, like immigrant birth rates decline over time. And so it's like, right, okay, so they're actually not the solution to the problem because they're subject to the same pressures. And so we need more and more. And so we become like this like black hole of lineages. Well, no, the West is where your lineage comes to die, actually. Like, if you thought you were going to get grandchildren, well, don't send any of your kids to the West because they're not going to do it, is basically what we need to think about there.
But I don't really care about the foreigners' birth
rate. I don't care about that either, but like...
I'm talking about the native's birth rate. Like,
sure.
You're not fixing that in the slightest.
But even your proposed solution is not a solution, because their birth rates collapse as well. So it's just like, okay, well, that didn't work, did it? Anyway.
Now, someone is overreacting slightly. Someone says, no, Elon Musk, the biggest problem with the great replacement theory is that it's literally false in the propaganda of neo-Nazis like yourself. P.S. We're still waiting for you to delete your account and step down as CEO like you pledged to do over a year ago.
Okay.
And here, just look at the profile description. It says, the Grand Old Party, the Republicans, is a fascist Nazi cult.
I think this person just needs to get off the internet.
Yeah, just, you know, crazy internet paraphernalia. Right, so I want us to look at some of the facts, okay? Some of the things that are actually happening and stop with the isms, stop with the theories. Let's just look at events that are taking place. Right, so here it's from Eurostat, Eurostatistics Explained. It's talking about fertility statistics. These data are from 2022. And it just shows here the birth rate of each country. Now, interesting though, which is very much alarming for everyone who cares about Western civilization and Western societies, is that these are not necessarily local birth rates.
So what do you mean not?
Ethnicity isn't necessarily taken into account.
Oh, right, right.
It's just people giving birth.
Yeah.
So it says live births per woman. It isn't live births per local woman.
Yeah. Because so, as I understand, in Italy, it hit one recently.
Well, here in Malta, it's 1.08. It's just incredibly low. Replacement rate is 2.1. It stands for average children per woman.
Yeah.
That's an average. You can't have 2.1 kids or something. You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, you see Greece here. My country is 1.32. It's very low. Cyprus, 1.37.
Britain not represented. God bless Brexit.
Italy here, 1.24. What's going on? Okay. Put on some nice music of the one you haven't. Get it on. Spain here has 1.16. Not good. Portugal, 1.43. The highest one is France, 1.79, which is well below replacement rate. Now, there are several issues about this. Some people aren't very alarmed. I think they should be,
yeah,
for several reasons. Now, personally, I don't embrace the position that the more the merrier, but I do think that having big numbers and good numbers when there are several really important cultural problems and threats to the dominant culture is of paramount importance. It's just salient.
Also, I mean, there's just the underlying fact that the future belongs to those who show up for it. If you don't have children, then your people, your culture, your lineage doesn't exist in the future, and therefore it doesn't belong to you. You're the end of 4 billion years of evolution of life. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah. And that's the way, the position where a lot of people diverge, who understand that the demographic is a problem, because a lot of the people on the right, we say that it's also a cultural problem.
Yeah.
Whereas leftists say this is merely an economic problem. You solve it by increasing numbers. If you increase number, GDP goes up, and that's it.
That's crazy because, I don't know, say 70 years ago, a lot of people were insanely poor and had loads of kids.
Yeah.
So the left-wing economic explanation is obviously nonsense.
And it says here, I won't give you much more details here. It says almost 2 times fewer children born in the EU in 2022 than 6 decades ago. 1.46 live births per woman in the EU in 2022. Women in the EU are becoming mothers later in life. France with the highest and Malta with the lowest fertility rate. Anyway, anyone who is more interested in that, they can check it out. Now, the issue is that people think, and a lot of people just portrayed as an economic problem. And here is, for instance, Chuck Schumer, who is...
The numbers on my graph are concerning.
Literally talking about it here. They can...
Fox won't let us watch it. Never mind.
Anyway.
Maybe.
No. Yep. So this is an infamous video, by the way. It has been played along many times. He is literally saying that there are low birth rates and they can be solved by mass migration. So that's not a... That's not news.
Stupid, sexy immigrants.
Yeah. Now, on the other side of the Atlantic, we have here International Rescue Committee. What is the EU Pact on Migration and Asylum? I want to show you something here. A particular phrase is the following. Europe is now at a crossroads. It can either move ahead with the policies of deterrence and exclusion.
Sold.
Which will simply drive more people onto dangerous journey or choose to lead by example.
We've covered this before and I made that exact joke before because I'm totally on board with it.
Last Friday, but yeah. It's important to show how on the one hand, a lot of people who are pro-globalist institutions are saying that anyone who is talking about threats to the dominant culture of Western countries is an extremist.
Yeah, okay.
And on the other hand, they are literally saying that their goal is to just lead a humanitarian revolution across the world. It says they are literally choose to lead by example in a spirit of global humanitarian leadership.
Yeah.
Well, that's the issue here because we have a lot of unelected bureaucrats who want to basically virtue signal and internalize any external problem to Europe and the US. And that's a major issue. And I want to say that one of the main reasons why this prevents sort of improvement of local birth rates is that it creates an economic problem. One of the reasons that young people young natives don't have families as they did before to the same degree is economic.
Maybe.
There are other factors. There are. I'm not saying it's just one. But
I'm not terribly persuaded by this. I think that there's... That, I mean, that is going to be something that is in people's minds. But I think that there's a general sort of anti-natalist culture that we have anyway, and a kind of veneration of youth. And so that people aren't encouraged to think about what their lives are going to look in the future, look like in the future. And ultimately, it's really the availability of birth control. Like, women have access to birth control and therefore they use it, and therefore they can decide not to have children. And if you've got a nice convenient life where you've got a nice job, you know, you go to the gym, blah, 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 you don't want to change that. And so women are just opting out because they can opt out.
I think you're right to a degree, to a significant degree. I can speak for myself.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a better economic condition, I would have had a clan by now.
Okay.
Yeah, house stallions
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
But, and a lot of the times, yes, we do focus on a lot of other cultural problems, especially when we talk about very aggressive feminism that leads women to think that career is the only thing of value in this life. Yes, it is. And I think it's a game of, it's an issue of numbers. The question is to what degree each of us is right. But I'm willing to bet that a lot of people are saying that they want to have family and that they are constantly being asked to pay for other things.
Yeah.
And what I want to say is that when people talk about the great replacement theory, I have the impression that they are talking about an intention behind it and stuff
like
that. I'm not talking about this.
I'd like to know when the theory is written down. I've never actually seen it.
I have another, but I'm just talking about anecdotal evidence. But the point is that it doesn't have to be intention. So much as you see a lot of people in globalist institutions who do nothing to prevent obvious threats. Mm-hmm. So when people like Chuck Schumer say literally that, yes, there is a demographic problem and it is going to be solved by unqualified mass immigration. And when you have unqualified mass immigration, you need to increase taxes and you need to have the younger generation pay for those who come in. That literally sabotages the economic condition of the young natives, and it sabotages their opportunities to have a family.
And it's done to make sure that there's people working in the economy, which obviously depresses their wages.
Yeah. So whatever the details of the theory are is irrelevant when we look at data like this. And the issue is that multiculturalists right now, they're not talking about assimilation. This is what a lot of people don't understand. They're literally saying that immigrants, wherever they are from, shouldn't have to assimilate. And not just immigrants. They're talking, generally speaking, about minority groups. They're saying that there is a dominant culture and it should respect all other cultures. And when they're talking about it in the abstract, they don't pose literal concrete questions like what kind of cultures are compatible with each other. And that leaves a gap of power that a lot of people are going to take advantage of it. And we were constantly being told by lots of people from these globalist institutions that these are extremist considerations. But look at what happened here in Germany. We have from Radio Genoa here, a lot of people in Germany are calling for an Islamic caliphate within Germany.
Hmm.
And Gadsad says here, it's beautiful to see Germany fully embracing multiculturalism. Obviously, he's ironic. This is how you create vibrancy in society. This is going to turn out well. Don't worry about it. So when we don't have strong dominant cultures in the West, there is a gap of power. Nature doesn't love vacuums, as the old saying goes. People are going to fill that vacuum. And the more these officials of globalist institutions are constantly attacking people who are patriotic and want to support their culture and denounce them as extremists, the more room they leave to other people to try and attack, culturally speaking, I'm not the dominant culture, and try to literally work from within to disentangle that, let's say, dominant culture.
What I love about this, what's the question? The Islamic Caliphate is the solution, but the question is, why is there such a lack of Islamic Caliphate? Sorry, carry on.
I don't know.
But this is why I kind of disagree with you probably on a fundamental worldview here, where it's that the concern with birth rates bothers me a lot less than the replacement idea. So the idea that you have a population that's not having as many kids as they should to replace themselves, therefore you bring in foreigners. That's the bit that's utter cancer for me. It makes me angry. But I think of two societies. I mean, there probably is about two on Earth that have gone through the lack of replacement and haven't engaged in mass immigration. The ones that come to mind are Iceland and Japan.
Japan's going down that road.
You warned this, but I still haven't seen it yet. So both of them have done that for the last 30 years. And neither of those 30 years have been bad. In fact, they've been great for both of them. And it's like, well, especially when we talk about England, like how overpopulated this part of the island especially is.
Yeah.
Because it's like when you look at the old graphs of how many English there are, like if we half the number of English and there's got rid of all of Tony Blair's children, of course, then would it be a bad thing? I mean, the population density would stop being like Northern India and start being more like France.
I mean, going back to Elon's point where he says, well, this is how civilizations collapse. Not really. Most civilizations that have collapsed due to war.
Callum, I don't think we'd disagree that much, because I agree with you that the more the merrier isn't invariably true. But I think that it is important to care about large numbers when you want to support the dominant culture, especially in conditions where it is under threat.
Yeah, I mean, just as a, you know, if I'm dictator for the day, yeah. I'm removing the threat.
Right. So what happens in a nutshell is that the West suffers from low birth rates. Everyone understands this to be a problem, but for different reasons. And officials of the managerial state see it as an economic problem, whereas people from the right see it as primarily a cultural problem.
Yeah.
So whether they actively bring it about or not, the issue with managerialists is that they're doing nothing to prevent it. And when they're phrasing their goals and expectations for the future, they're sort of counting on it. They're saying, yeah, this is going to be an inevitable trend. In order for us to reach our goals as a union or as a federation or whatever, we need to basically count on these flows. But the issue with managerialists is that they also deny the importance of the nation state. They deny the idea of national sovereignty as an obsolete notion. And they make it really worse for native young people to have families, and they literally turn a blind eye to many actual crimes. Mm-hmm. They sort of do nothing about it, and they adopt double standards. And in multiculturalist discourse, it's called group differentiated rights. There are some groups that are not the dominant groups who are seen as requiring a special treatment.
Oh, really?
And that is why you see two-tier policing, and you see a lot of people talking about things and getting away with it, and other people saying something that up until now was common sense and being denounced as extremists. Now, John gave us this video, if you want to check it out, about some people who are actively talking about how to bring forth a overthrow of the British government. And for some reason, this hasn't generated the alarm that it should have. Just watch it. And I want to say here about the expectations of people from the managerialist state. They haven't been exactly successful. Here, Michael O'Fallon is sharing a quote by Robert Mueller, who was the UN Assistant Secretary General. He says, in the process, religions will hopefully reduce and progressively give up their fundamentalism in favor of a global spirituality, the same way as nations in the United Nations have reduced to some extent their national fundamentalism called sovereignty.
Hopefully.
Well, yeah.
Obviously, but hopefully.
Yeah.
It's also just not even true, the idea that people have actually given up that much. I remember, what was it, during George Bush's administration, they passed a law saying that if The Hague tried to try a United States citizen, they have the right to invade the Netherlands. Because the fundamental truth is the global hegemon is a global hegemon.
Yeah.
No matter what you want to dress it up as.
Yeah. So, conclusion that replacement as a fact and process, I think, is absolutely taking place. I don't know exactly about the theory and all this stuff, but it doesn't matter. The point is...
The facts on the ground.
The facts on the ground, yeah. Let's stop the isms and all the conversation stoppers and talk about the facts that are taking place in plain sight. And if you want to check out more, I have a link here for an article by Ayan Hirsi Ali, if you are interested in checking out more. Hmm. Should we go to the next?
Yeah. So I'm sure you're all aware that Ireland is a very progressive place. It's always been progressive. highly progressive. And one thing they've always liked is foreigners, actually. They're a big fan of foreigners. And so this is why refugees welcome was such a natural thing for Ireland to adopt when there was, say, oh, I don't know, a global refugee crisis. You look skeptical.
I'm just thinking of that meme where it's like, what kind of foreigner are you?
So Ireland's been massively accommodating to refugees. They seem to be holding, I think it's something like 100,000 refugees, not holding, but hosting.
Demanding ransom.
No, there's not even ransom. No, you just can't, you can't have them. These are our refugees. We've got them now. So they've got 100,000 from Ukraine and tens of thousands of others from other places. In fact, they did a breakdown for us, which was in here somewhere. There we go. So they've got 26,000 non-Ukrainians, and out of them, you can see these numbers aren't these are the absolute numbers from 1 week, but they also represent roughly the right percentages in the doc. But as you can see, there are a lot of single males coming in to Ukraine, which is weird, because I would have said that a single male can't be a refugee. So if you're a refugee, you're fleeing from a war zone. In fact, let me get the doc up itself, because there's some good numbers in it.
I mean, unless you're unfit to fight, I don't know why the Ukrainian state would let you leave.
But it's not just the Ukrainian state, because these are the actual actual numbers when we get to them. There we go. So, 4,000 from Nigeria, 3,700 from Georgia. How are you a refugee from Georgia or Algeria or South Africa or Pakistan? Or Bangladesh, or Albania. I mean, obviously, we're not talking about refugees. And 32% of those are just single males. So again, bit nonsense. But the Irish government, though, despite being highly progressive, they are also a bunch of racists, because they pointed out, well, look, actually, Ireland's only got 5 million people in it, the Republic of Ireland. It's actually not that big. And so if we take 100,000, that's actually a really significant number. And so we end up running out of space. Which isn't very thoughtful, I would say. And so lots of them end up sleeping on the streets, which is, I mean, you know, what one might expect if this is just being done, oh, I don't know, on a kind of really wild moral impulse without any regards to the practicalities of what's happening. The Irish government said, look, we've tried to buy up all the houses and rent all the hotels that we can, but it turns out Ireland just isn't that big, and we didn't think about this. The Irish government says, quote, various issues beyond the control of the department for the failure to meet demand. It's like, yes, the Irish government isn't God and actually can't just make houses spring out of the ground. And so tens of thousands of good people took to the streets. Say, no, more. We must have more refugees. Refugees are good.
I love homelessness.
That actually is basically the argument, yes.
More homeless people, please. They only make Dublin better.
Among the wide variety of groups taking part were United Against Racism, the National Women's Council of Ireland, and several political parties.
They want more homeless.
For some reason, they do. Weirdly enough, none of them took refugees into their houses. So you might be like, okay, so they actually do want them to live on the streets. I mean, some locals here were interviewed by the Irish Times when far-right protests against asylum seekers housed in the former ESB building started in Dublin's East Wall. Molly felt that she had to do something, so she went down with her own cardboard sign that said, refugees welcome. I was really shocked, said her neighbour, Paddy. I thought, is this where I live now? I have a two-year-old, and seeing parents at the protest with kids, I was like, are these views going to be passed on to my little man? So the Irish equivalent of Liberal Democrats went out, and they protest. But none of them took refugees into their own houses, which is weird. In fact, the people on the other side of this were evil racists who were parroting the government's line that, no, actually, Dublin's full. Ireland's full. And so this is just very interesting how the Irish government and the evil racists are in agreement that there's not enough room, but the Irish government want to be good people and so want more refugees. But the Irish government's put in this horrible position where the morals and the reality have diverged and are going in different directions, and they find themselves, unfortunately, with the evil racists, which I particularly like this, because, you know, Ireland, as the Guardian tells us, has a prided itself on greeting visitors with warmth, styling itself as the land of 100,000 welcomes. But now there's a new slogan, hashtag Ireland is full. I don't think that's the government's official position. No, well, he is actually the government's official position, but I don't think that's their official slogan. Nigel Farage tweeted out, unlike the English, who say very little, the Irish are speaking out and protesting on the streets. That's true. That's true. And so the evil racists who run Ireland opted in to the EU's deal to tighten immigration controls. Because, of course, in the European Union, during the first 11 months of 2023, 355,000 illegals just arrived on the shores of Europe. Just washed by the tide. There's no tide in the Mediterranean, actually. Oh, they must have been coming on purpose. So they just turned up in 2023. And, of course, a lot of them have come to France. And so the French government's like, okay, to the channel. Despite the fact that we're, of course, paying not to do that. My chair's creaking for some reason. If my chair collapses now, I'm going to be very disappointed. And so the point being, the European Union is like, okay, so the evil people who are like Europe for the Europeans are right, and therefore we have struck a major deal to tighten immigration controls and making it easier to deport failed asylum seekers and hold their families in detention centres on the bloc's external borders.
I have heard this for years.
Yeah.
Did you see there's a lot of like weird nostalgia about, oh, when Britain was in the EU, we could just deport illegals.
I haven't seen that. No.
It's just
AC Grayling.
So yeah, one of these days we'll get people to the outside skirts of the EU and deport them. And it's like, it's never happened once.
Yeah.
Once have we dealt with the problem by actually doing that.
No, of course.
So like, very token efforts have been made and that's it.
Yeah. But the point is, I mean, detention centres, if I was a good person, I would uncharitably recharacterize those as concentration camps, like AOC did on the southern border of the United States. Anyway, so for years now, they've been blaming Britain's Rwanda policy for why they haven't got room for the Ukrainians.
What? Ireland is blaming us.
Yes. No blame on the refugees who've come from Morocco and Nigeria.
We buy up all the Rwandan house builders? What's the actual argument? I don't understand how that even makes any sense.
Is that the position of the government or of the
people? Yeah, no. This was the Prime Minister, Michael
Huffing
Martin.
Cope.
Whose government has taken pride in its open-door policy for Ukrainians fleeing war and is already sheltering more than 40,000 again this in 2022. So the Irish Army would open a, the Irish Army, 7,000 men, would open a tent city on Monday at the Gormanston military camp north of Dublin, shelter the latest arrivals. Martin said that Ireland's facilities were overloaded not because of too many Ukrainians, but because of an unexpected surge in asylum seekers from Africa and the Middle East arriving via Britain. He said the UK government's threat to deport new arrivals from Rwanda has spurred many to exploit the common travel area, which for decades has enabled barrier-free movement between the UK and the Republic of Ireland. Martin said that Britain's plans to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda, which he called a shocking sort of initiative, so as if, like, again, Rwanda is a safe country, I've been told, by many progressive people. I don't think they're actually just going to be chopped up or anything when they get there. But it's motivated people into utilizing the common travel area to come to the Republic. And so this came to my attention. I looked into all of this. It came to my attention because they've realized that, hang on a second, more than 80% of the migrants in Ireland have come from the UK. That means they're British migrants. That means these are the bad ones. That's how you know. So Helen McKenty, the Justice Minister, if I can get the mouse back, has said, hang on a second, they're coming across the border with Northern Ireland. It's like, okay, but who wanted to get rid of all the border controls on the border with Northern Ireland? Who wanted that? Who wanted that? Oh, it's so...
full-on Joker meme right now.
Have you ever heard of the Good Friday Agreement, Callum? 25 years ago, they were gradually dismantled because someone kept committing terrorist attacks because there was a border between Ireland and Northern Ireland. Who was that? Sorry, I'm not aware. I'm not very good at history, you see. It was argued that this would protect the peace process and safeguard Ireland's place in the EU single market. And Brexiteers accused Dublin of weaponizing the border. And so it's like, right, well, we can do something about that. So to prevent what were then Irish nationalists, I mean, they probably are still Irish nationalists, but the government was also in agreement with them. We've allowed refugees to just walk across the border, but the thing is, there is no border. You did this on purpose. This is one of those unexpected consequences that I've heard so much about. And so Rishi Sunak just came out and was like, well, Rishi Sunak came out and was like, well, this is working as planned, actually. It is working as a deterrent because they're going to Ireland. It's like, well, in a way, he's right. You know, can't argue that that's not the case. People are worried about coming here, and that demonstrates exactly what I'm saying. I guess it does. And so the Irish government are like, hey, we're not just going to let the Brits get one over on us, are we? No. We're going to have emergency laws to send the asylum seekers back to the UK.
But there's no border between us. They'll just walk back over, you idiot.
But also, these people aren't from the UK. They're from Algeria or Morocco or Nigeria or Albania or any of the other countries that are not at war.
They do sound like Londoners, yeah. You're right.
Yes. So why send them back to us? I mean, we can't send them back to anywhere, apparently. But if you guys can put in emergency laws to send these people back to where they came from, send them back to where they came from.
Well, they're from... well, from is not the right word, but they're last place they were before coming to Ireland was Belfast. So
correct.
I went to Belfast a year or so ago, and you noticed. I mean, it's ridiculous,
yes,
the amount of people who clearly aren't from there.
Yes.
And all the hotels are booked, the same situation you have in England.
Yes.
And I asked my mate who was there, like, what's going on with all this? And he was like, well, of course, they just walk south, and then they just claim asylum in Ireland because the Republic can't reject them, and there's no one stopping them. So that's what's happening there.
Even though
if they send them back to us, if they ever did, we would just put them back in Belfast. We're not deporting them to a third country because we're so piss poor at that. So in which case, they will just walk south to Dublin again.
I don't know why we can't just send them back to where they came from.
But one thing, though, it says they're to consider. And now in the last month, they're saying all sorts of stuff. They're saying that they're going to consider all sorts of stuff because they're scared of the upcoming EU elections.
Yeah.
So they really don't know where the people are going to support them or not. So, and they try to say on the one hand that they are listening to them and the results of the referendums. But they also, Helen McEntee said that you need to vote for the EU migration pact.
Yep.
Otherwise, it's even more migration.
Yeah. Because without the EU, I mean, Ireland did opt into the EU migration pact.
Yeah.
So they can see that this is coming. But Helen McEntee said, what's clear in the decision the UK have taken in choosing Brexit, they have actually seen an increase in people seeking asylum in their country. The way they deal with that, that's their policy. It's like, well, what? I don't think that the Channel migrants are actually a consequence of Brexit. But she says, that's why I'm introducing fast processing. I'll have emergency legislation in cabinet this week to make sure we can effectively return people to the UK. And it's like, okay, but if you could just do this anyway, if deportations are back on the table, we're going to get rid of these people. Yeah, all the way back to Britain, where they came from. It's like, no, send them back to where they're actually from. Like, I mean, we can't do this in Britain for some reason. But anyway, so the question is, well, what's Britain going to do about it? And the answer to that is that Britain is going to refuse to take them back, actually. I don't know how we're going to do this exactly, but... The government source has said the UK will not allow returns until the EU accepts that we can send them back to France. So we've got this stupid bureaucratic trail. They're going to come from Dublin back to Belfast, from Belfast back to France, and then back to Spain, wherever they've come from originally, and then back maybe eventually to Morocco, Algeria, and all place beyond. We could just send them there directly.
And none of that would exist if there was actual border policy.
Yes.
None of this would exist.
Yes, but also just imagine the bureaucratic expense and the legalese that has to take place for them to go to all of these places to eventually get back to where they came from, a place where there is no war. You know, if we were just sensible people, if we had a sensible country, if the EU was a sensible bloc, it would just be like, no, you're not from here, you don't deserve to be here, you're going back the same day, none of this would be happening. But instead, now we're in a diplomatic row with Ireland. And obviously, just to be clear, no, these people shouldn't be in Ireland in the same way these people shouldn't be in Britain, and they shouldn't be in France or Spain or Portugal or wherever else, Greece. You know, all of these people should just be sent home. simple as.
It's the same thing. The same thing you mentioned about France and the UK happens also with Greece and Turkey.
Oh, yeah.
And also Turkey. The EU and Turkey.
Well, Turkey was extorting the EU for, I think it was something like 4 billion euros they demanded, or else they were going to literally flood Europe with migrants. And so the European Union paid up. This is a few years ago.
They did it anyway.
Yeah, then they did it anyway.
And also Rishi Sunak was thinking of giving money to Turkey to create a railway network so people could come faster.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't even hear about
it. I'll find it, yeah.
No, I believe you. I believe you. I just didn't even hear about it. But yeah, so the point being, we're in a really, really stupid bureaucratic position, but everyone's made this bed and now we're lying in it.
Let's go to the video comments.
Just for some added Canadian context for yesterday's segment, our food bank friend here wasn't employed at any mere data analysis agency. He was employed by Toronto Dominion Bank, one of our foremost banks. He was also garbed in the sports jersey from Wilfrid Laurier University, one of our most prestigious universities. In English terms, he sort of rolled up, got an education at Cambridge, and went on to be employed by Lloyd's of London, and is now running around telling everyone how to steal from the food banks meant for the homeless. Charming. But really, it's quite pleasing to see some of Trudeau's new Canadians adapting to life up in the Great White North so well. You love to see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad that the video is completely paused, so we didn't get to see that. But yeah. What is it to say? The whole story, which is
God, it is insufferable that there's this kind of just, again, it's just total lack of respect, isn't it? That's the point. Anyway, I'm not going to go on
to the next one.
Callum's pigeon story actually left me feeling quite sad, so I ended up going and buying some bird food to feed the pigeons. We don't get too many of them here, but hopefully I see some. And it's true, a lot of people do view pigeons as rats with wings, which is a reputation that is undeserved, I think. I agree with Callum. Pigeons deserve our respect. Justice for pigeons.
Sorry, why?
Oh, because pigeons are not like any other animal. They were actually used by us.
Oh, right.
So then they're bred over time to like us as well.
Right.
So on a genetic level, they like us and want our love, and then we hate them.
That would make me feel bad about hating pigeons.
Oh, yeah. I just read, I don't know if this is even true. I just read it online and I was like, oh, God. And now I'm spreading that.
That's how I feel about the seed oil propaganda. I have no idea if it's true, but it feels correct. Yeah. But the thing is, though, like, rats also get a bad deal. Like, my wife loves like rats. She really wants to get a pet rat. And I'm like, no, don't want a rat. But they're loving and they're kind and they're.
What?
Oh, right.
Pigeons are way better than rats. Bugger off. I'm not talking about...
Oh, okay. We can rehabilitate the pigeons.
There's a rat typing on the internet being like, rats also get a tough deal. Bollocks.
Probably. What's wrong with rats?
Yeah, the Black Plague with your fleas on them.
That's the same as saying that the immigrants, the colonists who turned up in North America deliberately gave the natives a plague.
Yeah, well, if I was a native, I'd bloody hate colonists. Rightfully so.
But no, apparently rats are very kind creatures, actually. And very affectionate.
Ugh. Rat propaganda, that is.
I've not owned a rat.
We did not breed rats to be loving of us and live with them and then they feel pain or something. It's
even that's
rats.
Not why we bred pigeons. We bred pigeons to be a tool.
Yeah, exactly. And to be that tool, they had to love us to come back to us. No one's sitting there being like, my rat army, except maybe the Skaven, but that's a whole other problem. Yeah, Chad's just like, rats are disgusting. Rats eat their own babies. To rats. What? Total rat death.
My God, chat, that's harsh. I'm not even invested in rats. I just feel bad for them now.
Oh, they've got to go. It's going to actually be a comment before we get in trouble for
genocide. I did a quick search and I found that there are a few Rhodesian veterans groups. There's some that have a Facebook page. Here's one, for example. I can't really find very many updates. I do know there were some marches for them yesterday. But I don't think they're updated regularly. Primarily, I would say because a lot of them appear to be aging out, and they're just not picking. There's just no one to pick up the slack, unfortunately. But I'll keep an eye out if you want.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, that does seem to be the problem with them, is they're all just too bloody old these days. Which,
that thing is quite their fault.
Yeah. Oh well. The next one.
So recently, I had to study alone. In order to do that, I backtraced my mind in my university days, where I learned that the ancient Mesopotamians, in order to learn the language, used to copy texts. So I tried to do the same, And I have to say that it...
Okay, yeah, copying texts is helps you to learn the language.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, you're also into ancient Mesopotamian stuff. I overheard
I don't write
something you weren't talking about. Maybe you should start considering it.
Oh, no, it's way too much hassle. Because, I mean, like...
A cuneiform. You know, you need to achieve this Gilgamesh mentality before you can be...
Yeah, but I would actually need to get a clay tablet and a reed to do it, because it wasn't written with a pen. Yeah. So, no, I'm not going to be doing that.
Yeah, next one.
Well, I've been gone a while, but I heard Callum was leaving, so I had to come back to say goodbye. I get it. I actually just last week left the company that I've spent the first 7 years of my professional life with, and I'm starting somewhere new on Monday. So here's to new adventures. Since you like visiting third world countries, if you're ever interested in coming to Cleveland, Ohio, I'd be happy to be your local guide. But in all seriousness, you've been a fantastic presenter. It's been great listening to your podcasts, and best of luck, man.
Oh, thanks, mate. Enjoy the videos, I guess. I have heard that Cleveland's river does set on fire, so maybe that'll be something. I don't know how down...
Sorry, does it?
The river sets on fire sometimes.
Well, they dump industrial chemicals in it.
I'm not really sure.
Well, they must have.
I think maybe Satan just has picked his pet.
Yeah, maybe.
Even the rivers are burning, but who knows? Yeah, I did get an invite to Detroit once, and I was just like...
Yeah.
Go to Somalia before
I was nervous enough going to Chicago, so... Hmm. See the crime stats.
Well, it's just I saw Steven Crowder driving around there. It's just like...
Yeah.
No. Let's get the next one.
Kickstarter has devised the perfect product for those of you who want to keep your private conversations private while you're out and about in public. I give you SkyTed.
What? So you wear a mask.
You talk into the mask, I assume.
Right. It might be easier to learn Hungarian, and then no one will understand anything you're saying. And also looks less cringe.
Also, I just think that the people who tend to talk too loudly in public aren't self-aware enough to know that everyone's annoyed that they talk too loudly in public and so wouldn't wear this.
Yeah, there's that too. Let's go to the next one.
My car got ridden off, so I've been relegated to taking the bus the last couple of weeks. On this particular night, back from climbing, someone lesser got stabbed and the police blocked off the road. The bus driver couldn't turn around, take an alternate route, or coordinate with dispatch for another bus due to health and safety reasons. It reminded me of the Korean ferry disaster where 250 school children died because they were told to stay put and wait for rescue, and only those that disobeyed survived. It shows how fragile these systems are when compliance replaces good sense. Health and safety is really the death of civilization.
True, and that does also remind me that I've been climbing in a while. I should probably go.
By the way, I watched Everest this Friday.
And, oh, yeah?
Yeah, and now watching him climbing is, yeah, funny.
Yeah, I should definitely go.
To really understand the body dysmorphia of very many young women these days, you really have to discuss filters that many of these girls think that they are supposed to look like they do in the filter. I mean, let me demonstrate. This is me. I'm not wearing any makeup. This is the real me. I'm just out of the shower. And I am the same. No makeup, and it's deleting my eye bags and my wrinkles. And imagine if I used a good filter instead of a free crap filter. And I assure you all the Insta models and many of the female YouTubers are paying for way better filters.
Perennial problem.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad. Bad, bad, bad. I do hate the beauty one. It just is puts sparkles and literally just smooths out everything until there's nothing left of the face.
You know what? I don't see why women are doing this.
It's fun every once in a while. Like, I can see that attachment, but after that, it's just okay.
They're doing it because men are concerned about the looks of women.
Yeah, but for instance, I don't like too much makeup and stuff. I, you know, just like natural beauty.
Sure, sure.
When I see too much makeup, I get, you know.
Yeah, but it's not really about what you like. What I think what it is that women are aware that men are visual creatures. And so when you take that sort of premise and then apply it outside of an actual male-female interaction, then you've just got this kind of desire to be Like, to get rid of all these imperfections and stuff like this. I was blown away to learn that women under 30 are getting, like, Botox and plastic surgery and stuff. It's like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, you do not need it at all, but you definitely don't need it when you're in your 20s. But because they're constantly looking at their own faces in their cameras, they see the imperfections in their own face. They want it done.
It's also just not how you attract men.
No, of course not. But it's a...
We were talking to Daisy earlier, and she was talking about her visit to Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, she was telling me, we were talking about women. And the women in Russia, for example, they are considered very attractive to Westerners.
Sure.
The way they dress, the things they do, and it's purposeful. It's not just genetics. There's a lot of theories about this in Russia. Why are there 10 out of 10s on every street corner? Why don't women wear high heels to go and buy milk?
Yeah.
And the theory goes that basically a lot of men died in the wars. A lot of men die of alcoholism.
High competition for women.
So the high competition. And apparently the same is true of Brazil because there is a huge population of men who are gay and trans. So the women just have to compete and therefore are far more attractive. But funnily enough, they don't boob peel themselves to be attractive.
Yeah. Yeah. But the I think the Western woman phenomenon is genuinely looking at their own faces, beginning from the premise that like a younger, smoother skin is better. And therefore just constantly essentially getting a disconnected view of what their own looks are. You know, and like we've seen the makeup videos where they're literally painting their faces. Like I paint a bloody miniature, you know what I mean? And it's like, man, I just think they've got a totally just bizarre way of thinking about themselves. I think it's terrible.
Whenever you say smooth skin, I just think of ghouls.
Well, yeah, obviously. Obviously.
Yeah. That's the, what is it, 30-year-old women now? Hags.
Oh, yeah, the hags.
Yeah, smooth skin. Anyway, let's go to the next one.
This is the most American way I can think of giving Callum a send-off, a 20-round salute with a magazine-fed shotgun. Thank you very much for the years of entertainment, and good luck in your future endeavors.
Doesn't look like fun, doesn't it?
Thank you very much. Also, that is cool as hell.
Yeah. Now I know what I want to do next time I go to America.
Wholesome video.
Siren says, today is a good day. The unelected tyrant Hamza, useless, is gone. Let's hope his hate crime bill goes with him. Well, the hate crime bill is probably here to stay, right? It's not going to go anywhere because they love this, whether it's Hamza Yusuf doing it or not. But I think Bo's going to cover it on the podcast tomorrow because doubtless there's going to be loads to go through. Ron says, the delivery driver PayFacts approve how supply and demand works in real time and how it directly affects workers. This should be rubbed in the nose of every pro-immigrant retard out there. Yeah, but that's going to be like, you're a racist. I don't understand. This isn't true. Blah, blah, blah. Because it's not really about the actual facts of the thing. It's about rendering themselves as good people and you as a bad person. That's what I've come to decide. Luca says, as a first-year uni student, the delivery economy seems to be propped up by lazy foreign students that can't because they're rich, or won't cook. The number of food deliveries I witness on a daily basis is staggering. See, I always want to see a sort of study done on the health effects of eating junk food all the time. Like, so if all of our...
What? Do you need them?
No. Specifically from Deliveroo.
Sadly, not a single one has been done.
No. Should have been more clear. Specifically on Deliveroo, and specifically localized to these areas.
Yeah.
Because if, like, you know, the... Back in the 80s and stuff, Gordon Gekko, those sorts of types, cut quite a good figure in their suits. But now Gordon Gekko's got to be fat, right? Lazy. Like, Gordon Gekko doesn't go anywhere. So it's now
the effect of body positivity.
Well, yeah, exactly. So now it's literally, you know, the sort of socialist meme of the capitalist pigs ruling over society? Well, that's actually kind of what they're going to be turning into, surely, right? So it's like it's just, I want to see, like, an actual map of, like, obesity and Deliveroo drivers correlating and stuff like that. I bet it's possible to do. Omar says, it's much worse because none of the illegals have overheads like tax or rent to pay. Unlike the natives, it's pure profit on our dime. That's a great point as well that we should have brought up.
So the way you do it, my understanding, because there were some that were caught in Wiltshire by the Wiltshire police, not on bikes, but on cars. They stopped them for not having insurance, and then they found out they were here illegally, working illegally, so forth. They're hard to stop a guy on a bike just because he's on a bike. So, my understanding is that you get someone...
God willing, we'll make it happen.
There's a criminal who does the fraud for you, so you're on the system, and then you pay him a small amount of your earnings.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, because your board's paid for, your Wi-Fi, your food,
yeah,
your electricity, etc., the profit you're making is better than the average wage in the UK, even on that small of an official wage.
Mm. Yeah, when you take out, exactly. Half my earnings on spending money, you know what I mean? It all goes on stuff. General Haiping says, we've got a dark restaurant in my town, 4 different restaurants, all operating out of the old shops down a side road. Probably a business startup loan per business too. Looked into it, and of course it's owned by foreigners, pulling yet another foreign scam. I mean, is it a scam if they're, you know, actually making the food? It's just a slop factory. What?
I'd love to rename certain crimes. So you've been accused of running a slop factory. It's actually just a foreign, money laundering restaurant. It has to be renamed in all court documents as slop factory.
Yeah.
You have sloppy crime laws.
Yeah.
The Unbreakable Litany says, as a former chef, don't order from a delivery service if you want to continue seeing that restaurant in business. Not only will your food be stolen, they'll actually take 30% commission from the restaurant.
Okay. Yeah. Like if you want to actually support the place, go there and buy it in person.
Yeah. But it's Friday night, and I don't want to get out of my house. You know?
Why not?
Because I've been out of a busy week. I've got my slippers on.
I always thought it was kind of beta as well, if you're the man of the house, to order delivery.
Don't order.
No, but just get in your car, drive there, get the food, bring it back. Yeah. Like, your wife's going to love that.
Probably.
So,
but isn't it more prestigious to have a slave cast underneath that you can order around? Like it's some sort of old-timey emperor.
Kind of cringe.
I don't think that, Mansa Musa was you kind of cringed. You brought 12,000 slaves with you.
I don't know, man. There's a difference between having the slaves pick the cotton. That's, you know, you're a rich man. But if you're having a slave wipe your ass, just wipe your own ass.
No, because I'm so phenomenally rich. I don't need to do that.
If I were an emperor, I'd have trust issues. I'd like to cook food myself.
This too.
That is a good point, yeah.
Yeah, even if they didn't poison it, they could spit on it.
You're running a concentration camp. Why would you let the inmates make the food? That's not going to go well.
I'd like to grill.
I like cooking too, but anyway.
A man should be able to take care of his own duties. And having a slave do all of them means that you don't, which makes you soft.
The point being, but you're the emperor or the king or whatever.
Yeah, I don't want a soft emperor.
I'm not saying you do, but I can understand that you've got other things going on. You know, I'm too busy to wipe my own ass. Got to get the slave to do it.
Henry VIII over here.
Sophie says, can we talk about how illegal immigrants are paid to have children and natives are not? If that was reversed, things most likely would be different. I'm sure it wouldn't be as bad, but I don't think it'd be significant enough to make an actual concrete change. So they wouldn't be like, okay, we're going to have to replace the entire population with Deliveroo drivers. Henry says, I detest Deliveroo, Just Eats and Uber Eats, and not just because of the stealing, dodgy business practices, etc. They also have branded electric mopeds that routinely ride down cycle paths, pavements, etc. This is actually illegal, as they're not restricted pedal-assisted electric bicycles and are throttled mopeds instead. So not only are they illegal to have on the bike paths, but the riders are just knobs who are outright dangerous to have. Well, the thing is, I think that there's this kind of threshold, right? The illegal immigrant is like, you know what? I'm actually not that bothered about the laws in your country, which is how I came to be here in the first place. So I know I'm not supposed to.
And how I have this job.
Yeah. And now, yeah, exactly. It's how I have this job. It's how I can afford this moped. I actually don't care that much about the laws. You are right when you say they're slowly turning every inner city into Mumbai or Ho Chi Minh City, where you just ignore all of the laws of the road. But then I guess when you're already illegally in the UK, what's breaking a few more laws? Exactly. See?
I just imagined a cover of the Doors song "Riders of the on the Storm" with "Riders of the Slop."
I'm not in any way familiar with them. Sorry.
Okay,
but I'm surprised there's not more drug dealing going on, to be honest.
Oh, there will be.
Yeah,
that's just harder to document.
Yeah, I guess when the delivery drivers are like, "Well, look, I'm getting paid half the amount I was getting paid a couple of years ago." Theo says, "All the slop is made in one giant cauldron. Then the migrants say their magic to turn it into your chicken tikka masala or your sweet and sour chicken. You may not like it, but that is what peak efficiency looks like. It's just raw capitalism, Callum. Don't know what you're complaining about." Omar says, "I believe the term for unions of illegals advocating for the rights of illegals is usually gangs or the mafia."
What do we want? Protection money. When do we want it?
But, I mean, unironically, there could well be a Deliveroo mafia and you wouldn't know.
Until being invaded, I mean, it's sort of like the Spartans. You know, the Spartans viewed themselves as occupying that land, and the helots could rise up any day.
Yeah,
like the Deliveroo economy was just like, we're occupying this place.
Well, mobs of Deliveroo drivers overthrowing civilization.
Britain 2050. I have a vision.
Someone online says, there's one pizza place here where you know you're getting a quality product because you walk in and several old men are arguing with me in Italian. Yeah, I bet their pizzas are pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, they're saying that I'm not a big fan of Italian pizza, man. I think American pizza is superior.
I have an issue with the Italian pizza because it's thin crust.
The thing is, I actually like thin crust pizza.
No, you only need to have thick crust pizza.
Steve says, I work in the Home Office in a cross-department visa asylum team. If you think this is bad, internally it is so much worse. It all comes from above, of course, but nearly 65% of the people in these departments that I work with have visas themselves. I said, God, 65% of the Home Office is immigrant. Honestly, I'm surprised.
Would explain a lot.
I'm surprised it's only 65%, actually. Another 25% of middle-class leftist filth that you would expect in this situation. But then there are people like me and the remaining percent who are actually there because they too are concerned about the future of the country. Everything in here is a mess. No wonder there is an alcohol problem in these offices. I mean, it's just mad, isn't it? It's just actually mad. Fuzzy Toaster says, always remember, parasites need a host to survive, but this does not mean they're incapable of killing the host. That's true. Thomas says, Deliveroo are having their immigration caucus wages subsidized. It's that simple. A reminder that we have a massive grey economy in the wider society. Think manufacturers, abattoirs, farms. They would never survive this kind of scrutiny they're supposed to be receiving. Totally true. OPHUK sends us a super chat on Rumble. Says, 1,400 years of jihad and our elites thought giving the enemy passports would turn them into good Westerners. Yeah, I know. It's kind of insufferable, isn't it? Not even gonna continue down that line of thought. Baron von Warhawk says, when it comes to the actions of our leaders, never attribute to stupidity what can equally be explained through active malice, a sense of sadism, and an endless desire for totalitarian control. See, I mean, there are definitely different, like, factions in the groups that are doing this. You've definitely got the sort of Humza Yousef, I hate white types. But then you've got, like, the types that are, like, just literally the bureaucrats being like, okay, someone's got to pay for the pensions, you know? Yeah. So I don't think there's necessarily the same group, but, you know, the whole process attracts both or multiple kinds of people.
It's a two-tiered thing.
Yeah. Someone online says, population shrinkage wouldn't be a problem if there wasn't an entitlement Ponzi scheme benefiting the boomers. Yeah, that's the real issue. It's like, no, we've made all these commitments to people who themselves never paid state pensions. I mean, when did the state pension come in?
I don't know. It's not bad.
It's got to be in the 60s or something, right? Or just after World War II?
Probably after World War I.
After World War One,
most likely. It'll probably be incredibly small, though, and for really old people.
Yeah.
But this is the thing about the replacement rate that gets me. It's like, well, who will pay the pensions? It's like, no one.
Yeah.
We just won't have them, and that's fine.
But on the plus side...
You didn't save for a pension, and guess what? You don't have any savings, dipshit. You're going to die early.
On the plus side, there won't be anyone to give pensions to, because none of you had kids.
It's just... I just hate this viewpoint that they're... Like, if you've saved your own money, if you've actually saved for your future, you will have a pension. It's not a problem. You don't have to think about it. But the idea that people who didn't save, pissed around their entire lives, didn't make any effort to think for the future, and are now 70 and starving, it's like... And I know I'm an unsympathetic guy when it comes to this stuff, but, like, you made a series of life choices over decades, and then are just like, what the F? I don't have any money. I remember when Miles was talking to me about when he worked in banking, and his whole thing was financial advice. That was all he did. And so he would get phone calls, and the phone calls were the same thing every single day, and it was the most mental stuff you ever heard. It would be someone in the city of London earning £100,000 a year back when he was doing this as well.
So yeah, yeah.
Even more than now. But they'd spend £120,000 a year, and they'd call up asking for financial advice, and the question they
Stop spending so much money, retard!
Yeah, that wasn't the question. They weren't like, how do I spend less? The question was, when can I retire? And it was like, never, idiot. You have to work until you're 300. Like, that just doesn't work.
Okay.
I have no sympathy for, like, yeah. If you do that for 50 years of your adult life and they're like, there's no money at the end of it. Yeah, guess what, dipshit? Obviously.
Yeah. The Shadow Band says, AI, globalization, mechanization can replace the need for a high population, both workers and consumers. You can have a shrinking population and still maintain a homogenous culture. Yeah, this is another thing as well. Like, it really is just, it's the commitments, man. They're just going to have to go away. Like, there's just no getting around it. I mean, I'm not expecting to get a pension just because of the time. In 20 years' time, what's a British pension going to be worth? Not much.
Whatever you save.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't save it, it's not there.
Exactly. Tim says, you can replace the people, but if they live by the same ideas, the country will live on. change all the ideas and the country is gone. Well, I don't know, man. Like, there is something to be said for the people of the sort of substrate of the thing, you know? Thomas says, Elon is right, Eva is wrong. Immigration replacement is a symptom, not the cause. The cause is modern monetary theory, the Cantillon effect, and rational choices made as to what you can afford in life and what you are prepared to endure in terms of hardship. Yeah, but this is the thing. Like, I really think the problem is the disconnect between sex and reproduction. Like, the fact that, we can artificially inhibit that. It's like, yeah, but that's why you don't have kids. Because otherwise you would just make different life choices based on the fact you have children to deal with. And so this sort of extreme liberation is going to cause a cratering of the population. There's no getting around it. Alexander says, the Catholic Church has been correct about this all along. Birth control is immoral. Ah, see? Turns out I've come around to the Catholic Church position. And has been a big enabler for destroying our civilizations. It's hard to argue it, though.
Yeah, no, if you look at the graph, I mean, the UK one, it actually isn't the birth control that does it. Even before that, it's the abolition of no-fault divorce marriage.
Yeah.
So the fact that you could now divorce for whatever reason, instantly, like the next year, it starts going down.
Yeah. So, but also, I mean, birth control was in the mid-60s it was introduced, and you can see the graph where it's just...
I know, there's another drop at that point, at least the UK graph, but it's just true. Like, if you I'm not on the bandwagon that the birth rate thing is a big issue for me, but if you want it to be reversed, you just have to destroy women's rights. That's just true. That's a truism.
I know.
So, there it is.
But the thing is, like, women surely have to be looking at this and going, okay, so if I don't have children... it's going to be some foreign-speaking immigrant that is going to be just... I'm just going to live around foreigners forever, right?
Well, you can't individually fix the entire society's trajectory.
No, but it is required that individually each woman has children.
Yeah, but you want a civilizational fix, what you're saying there.
No, it's got to be in the minds of the women themselves. Like, no, my role in life is to be a mother because I'm a woman.
Yeah, yeah, but you also need to fix... I mean, if we're talking about reality, like where we are in the UK, our big problem is the mass immigration.
Sure, we have to
fix that.
Yeah, yeah, but... And I agree, we do have to fix that. But that doesn't get around the fact that, yeah, there is a problem with population decline, and there is a problem with just the birth rates, right?
If you want it going up, that's what you got to do.
Well, you don't even necessarily want it going up, but if you want just a relatively stable country, because, I mean, it could be entirely possible that certain sectors of the economy do just collapse because of low birth rates. Right, it is entirely possible that sort of thing happens. The problem is, it's just literally in women's minds, and a large percentage of women's minds, that I'm just never going to have children. It's like, that's just not an option you should have. You know, human beings are here. We should be reproducing. There's no getting around it. You're part of a great continuum of life. You shouldn't have the option of just stepping off of it and then expect all the benefits of civilization while everyone else is doing this particular kind of labor. You've said, yeah, I'm not going to have that. It's going to benefit from everyone else doing it.
You're targeted for reproduction.
Well,
but this is why the United States has alimony.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we don't have it in the UK, thank God. But
yeah.
It's fair to have that system where a guy has to pay for the rest of his life for the child's upbringing or the wife, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you have a society that's built on the basis that marriages are sacred and forever. But we got rid of all that.
Yeah.
And then there are some states in the United States where you still get alimony payments for the rest of your life. It's just... morally evil, because you're asking the guy to uphold one part of a bargain that no longer exists,
and also that you don't have, and you're free to break at any time.
That he just gets screwed.
Yeah, it's mad. Anyway, go on to the next section. Ribar sends a $10 super chat saying, "I live in Arizona, USA. My local grocery store now has tents in the parking lot. One of the refugees, quote unquote,
sale.
no, they're not." Approached me for money, and approached and asked for money. I declined, and she proceeded to try and take my purse. Jesus Christ! Just to be clear, these people are just not refugees, like, because there are not actually very many wars going on in the world at the moment.
What was there? Three? Probably some in Africa, but I care about them.
Yeah, well,
I mean, the Tigray one, I think that's ended. With Ethiopia.
Tell you what, though, you go back 500 years and just look at Wikipedia, constant wars all the time.
Yeah.
Like dozens of wars going on all at once. And so, actually, you know, the liberal world is quite peaceful. These people aren't bloody refugees.
When did the Afghan war end? It was 3 years ago now, right?
Yep.
The Afghan war was finally over. We've still got massive amounts of Afghans coming over.
Yeah.
Because we owe them, because they were our translators.
No, they were collaborators with the foreign regime. Oh, I respect that.
No, it's just such an obvious lie. It's like we took, what was it, like 10,000 translators, and they were like, oh, there's an extra 30,000 people. Why? Families? Okay, and then the next year, another 30,000.
Yeah, but there are loads. It's not just 30,000. If it was 30,000, okay, fair enough. That's not that many. It's not. There's loads.
No, but that's my point. That's 2021. Oh, you're right. 2022, yeah. Then 2023.
More and more translators are coming out. Yeah,
keep being found.
Neo-realist super chats. It's not just the Irish residents of Newtown Mount Kennedy acting. There is a group called Nucleo National reviving the Reconquista in Spain. Vigilantes evicted migrants from in Madrid from shelter buildings. Yeah, I mean, thank God there are other people in the world who are bothered about this. It just seems literally like the English is going to do nothing about anything. North FC Zuma says, Ireland clearly has a shortage of Deliveroo drivers then. That's a good point. I mean, no one made the argument, did they? Just imagine how quickly your takeaways in this can be cold.
And half-eaten.
Yes.
By the foreign man.
I just can't think. And made in a food slop kitchen. Yeah.
I just, of all the things that can go wrong between me ordering on an app and the food getting to me, maybe I'm germophobic or something. I just can't stand.
I certainly don't trust it.
Yeah, the level of failures that can happen in between that food being made and it getting to me.
Yeah. I mean, like the only time I ever order food is like from the local Chinese takeaway, and it's one of the employees of the takeaway that brings the food.
Is it a car or a moped?
It's a car.
Amazing.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible.
Luxuries.
It's 21st century technology. But like, it's the same person every time, and he works for the place, right? Mm. So it's fine. He's not a Deliveroo driver. George says, I honestly didn't expect progressive Ireland to rebel against the invasion, but it seems they have a sense of national identity. Yeah, even the progressive Irish are like, look, you know, we want to be good, but we're going to have to be evil on this. Sorry.
Well, on that note, we're out of time.
Oh, are we? Okay.
But if you'd like more, lettuces.com. Otherwise, goodbye.